Welcome to MSP 1337. I'm your host, Chris Johnson, a show dedicated to cybersecurity challenges, solutions, a journey together, not alone. Welcome, everybody, to another episode of MSP 1337. I'm joined this week by Bill McCulley to talk. Yeah. I was close, man.
Yeah, you were. You ever watch MASH? Father Mulcahy.
Do I ever watch MASH? Like, if I watch like TV Land, yeah, sure, I can watch MASH. But
right.
So, you posed a question a few weeks back, and it was less about how to offer cybersecurity services and more about, I'm thinking about offering this specific service. What are your thoughts around charging for it the way I've posed it? And I think I gave some, like, I was like, dude, if you pull that off, I want to know your secrets, right? Like, and I think the challenge with what you had posed, and we'll get into some of the details here in a second, is thinking about time commitments with what you posed, because really you had proposed a workshop concept around policies, or you could fill in the blank with any number of things: cybersecurity insurance questionnaires, policies, how to show evidence for things that you might need to get a contract. It doesn't really matter what it is, but the idea behind your approach was, we'll do a 2-day workshop. I don't know about you, but you've talked about going through the Trustmark and having gone through CIS, just the sheer enormity of time commitment, and maybe not time commitment in the volume of hours, but time commitment into committing to doing the time when it's scheduled on your calendar. So if it's 2 hours a week or 5 hours a week or whatever you've decided, that you can't skip 3 weeks and then put 2 hours in week four and think that you're going to progress very fast through the program. And it may actually put you on a regression stage, right? Because you can only implement something halfway. You now have to go back and start over because you don't know where you left off. So for those of you listening, this whole episode is about, how do you position security services when you're navigating frameworks and trust marks and you're trying to sort of say, I know I need to do this with my client, and what better opportunity than as I'm going through this and dialing it in, why not then use that as opportunity to do so with my clients? And is that fair, kind of in the question that you would ask, like, how do I, if I'm struggling to do this myself, should I even consider doing this client facing, at least right now?
That's spot on.
Yeah.
In the situation we get in, Chris, well, at least me personally, I think, you know, I've had some of my clients for a long time, 30 yeah. years plus, and I feel responsible. So as I'm learning stuff and trying to tighten M6,
right,
I now start thinking about my clients and think, oh my gosh, what would happen if I know this is there, I know ways to protect it, and I don't offer it.
Yeah.
So we're kind of putting it in as we learn, you know, like enhanced security services, or we'll add this additional tool and monitoring for X number of dollars a month, but it's kind of piecemeal. And
sure,
that's what I don't like about it. And they don't really learn. We're just doing it.
So I think there's a lot of things in what you just said. The first thing that comes to mind for me is remembering that when you say, I'm just learning about this fill in the blank that needs to happen to improve my own security posture, I think you have an obligation from an educational standpoint to share that with your client. Like, this isn't, I need you to buy this product so that you can solve this problem that we just discovered. It's more of a, I'm learning, we all are, and the threat landscape is constantly changing. The security tools and services landscape is changing faster than anything else in our industry, I think, you know, with AI features and functionality coming into play to help us. You're constantly faced with what could I be doing that I'm not, that will help me do this better. And I think that's the most important piece, right? Because it is not your job to make decisions for your clients. It's your job to create options and know, like, hey, these are the outcomes that we can potentially help you see come to fruition. But I don't think this is a, I missed an event in my monitoring, Therefore, it is now my fault that bad things happened. Maybe, like, that's a tough one to prove, because all the event tells you is what it was able to, you know, grasp as a piece of technology based on the information that it was fed. And we know that it's not always truth, right? Like, it could be a false positive. It could be any number of things. So I think that to share that piece is I think paramount in the overall conversation, because any progress forward is good progress. Like, that's, we're raising, you know, if the water is rising and all the boats are rising with it, then that's good. But to your other question, this is the bigger one. This is the one that I think every MSP is asking the question of. Every time I improve my security posture, there's a good chance I'm increasing my overhead cost, right?
Right.
So how do I pass some of that along to my clients? Because at some point, I'm going to stop having positive dollars, and now I just have negative dollars. And it's like, why am I still doing this? And your challenge, and correct me if I'm wrong, is if I'm not yet doing this well internally, should I even consider this client facing?
And here's the thing. I think since we've been in Secure Outcomes, I've heard you say a number of times that, you know, we're to be our client's trusted advisor.
Sure.
So not really being out there selling, like you said, the tool, but you get in that situation where we know what's happening. We know the security landscape is changing, and we should be advising our clients. And, you know, as we go through these controls with CIS or the trust mark, you then stumble across stuff like, wow, I missed that. Or,
yeah,
you know, something as simple, Chris, as, you know, we have security systems here, but we don't lock our front door. And we had someone walk in and tell us they had to take our electric meter off the building this week. It was a scam, but these are things that, you know.
Sounds like a pretty good one. Like, I'd love it if I didn't have my meter working. Like, yeah, it's a great week.
No electric. So, but I mean, that's a type of stuff you come across. You know, I think of building security, and I think I mentioned in one of the town halls, it's like, it's no big deal here. I'm in a smaller part of the Pittsburgh area. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I had one similar. I had one similar that I think will really heighten how challenging this is from a physical security standpoint. Doctor gets asked by one of his nurses, here's all the paperwork. I need you to sign all of these. And he started flipping through them, and he's like, I didn't order any of these. I didn't order any of it. He's like, where did this come from? Oh, it came through the fax today. He's like, these are all scams. And literally, I am basically committing fraud if I sign any of these. So like, not only is it about getting scammed from a financial standpoint, but he would have been in hot water from a fraud standpoint by signing those, because he never did request any of them. So now there's money potentially coming in to somebody because of his signature. And so I think, to your point, this goes hand in hand with, as we learn stuff, we should implement stuff. And it doesn't always mean we only implement internally. In fact, one could argue that just because you have the, so let's just say, for example, it's 2FA. We'll keep it simple. You know that you need to implement 2FA. You have four critical systems in your environment that, as of right now today, you can't implement 2FA on because they don't support it. So it raises the question, do you not do 2FA with your clients or with anybody else until you can do it internally? So you're like, wow, well, the reason why my clients were breached, in fact, was because we didn't help them get to the 2FA implementation because we were 6 months out from getting ours done. Like, I think that's where this argument becomes flawed, is to say, do this internally before you do it client facing. No, evaluate internally, figure out what the roadmap looks like for your internal situation. That doesn't mean that has to be exactly verbatim what you do with your clients. And I think that might be an area we need to do a better job in our own process whether I'm working with Secure Outcomes or somebody else. Like, don't get stuck because you can't address something today as a excuse to not do it where you can somewhere else.
Yeah. I think that's great advice, and we have to do that.
And I think the service, I mean, we've heard that. I mean, how many times, Bill, did we hear this early on? I'm doing this together with my clients so that I can afford to do this internally, right? Like, I can't afford to buy the tool unless I get some other clients to go in together with me to purchase this expensive whatever it is. I think that's fundamentally flawed in its logic, because that's about finding the shiny object that allegedly solves a problem instead of evaluating what do I already have that at least gets me into a compensating control. You know, one of the things I wished I'd have known coming into the Trustmark that was said was, I didn't know how many of the things I wasn't doing until I started to go through this that we have no excuses for not doing. And I'll give the example. The example that was given was after hours access. And I'm like, well, I asked them to elaborate. I go, you mean like walking through the like the doors, like someone key cards into the building? He said, that's when we should track too. But his point was like, why is anybody that works for our organization logging in as an administrator with privileged access to a client account at 2 o'clock in the morning? Like, right. There is no good reason for that, even if it's a good reason, right? Like, because yeah. No one else knows about it. So it should be immediately treated as it's bad. And so I think it's things like that, that we have to recognize that one of our challenges is to stop working, right? Like, our clients are 8 to 5.
Yeah.
So when we work on their stuff at 2 o'clock in the morning, who's paying for that?
Right. Right. Yeah, it, you know, I'm just thinking of the client, and I'm thinking of what we brought up at the beginning of the session here. And, you know, that 2-day workshop, I was thinking of the workshop or whatever you would want to call that. And I was thinking, you know, you're going to get a lot of feedback too from the client that may be beneficial, something you may not even know about as far as security or anything, IT security, building security, physical vendors. So you can also learn a lot from your client as well.
So, and assuming you can get that, I think that's an amazing opportunity. I don't know that I don't know what the appropriate price tag is for that. I don't know right. that I, even if I did, I don't know that I should share it, because that'd be like my version of the truth, right? Like, but some things that come to mind for that, you know, like, so for example, with the Trustmark, we have every Tuesday, we call it the Cyber Success Meetup. Like, that's an opportunity for, like you said, to ask questions. Do we do that well with our clients? Like, hey, it's Tuesday or Wednesday or whatever day of the week it is. It's my open office hours. We're here to answer questions. Like, and if no one asks a question, here's some of the things that we plan on talking about. Like, did you see in the news the Microsoft, you know, exploit with the executives? How does that impact you as our clients? Does it have any bearing on what we do? And maybe it does. And maybe it's an opportunity to educate on, like, hey, if they can hit Microsoft, do you really think that we're so invincible that we're protecting you at a level that says it's never going to happen to you? No. Yeah. So what do we need to do that ensures that if something like that does happen, how do we minimize the impact, and how do we do it in such a way that says, this is a pay to play, right? Like, this isn't a charity system. We didn't start businesses to be, you know, well, I'm just doing it out of the goodness of my heart, always and forever. I don't need to pay for anything. I don't need a quality of life. And my kids will magically be able to go to college all on their own because they know a couple celebrities that have pulled some strings with the universities that they want to go to, right? Like, somebody's reality, right?
Yeah, right.
So how do you navigate that, right? And I think that's what you are really on to something by saying, like, hey, let's spend time together, but not do it from I'm volunteering to hang out here on, say, a Saturday morning for 4 hours. I'm saying that I think you need to be here for 4 hours, and this is what I think it should cost you to participate in this conversation. That's what coaches do, right? Like, good athletes don't have a coach to tell them what to do just to tell them what to do. They do it because they know what's best for them, and they pay money to be coached, right? Like if you want to be better, you find somebody that can coach you to be better than what you are today, and you don't expect to get that for free.
Right. Right. How do we do that here? you know, we have leadership coaches, so
right,
and we pay for that.
Right.
I mean, it's long. It's and it was kind of that was kind of my thought process. And then again, I'm juggling it, Chris, with the, you know, as I go through the Trustmark again, am I really at the position where I can offer that kind of coaching slash advice to a client? But then you throw it in there as well as a, you can't take the risk not to, like right. you were saying, you know, evaluate, get it in place. So that's kind of where I am. And that was my thought behind the, you know, the workshop type deal, to try and recoup a little bit of the costs involved.
Well, I think it's an opportunity where you could also bring resources in to help, you know, present the case. You know, I think to your point about, like, you know, what, you know, the risk of not talking about it, of not doing this, of saying, like, you know, I'm not going to charge them for products XYZ to change because of your own risk in not doing so. And I think the one thing that comes to mind for me, and knowing that tomorrow we have the cyber, we're talking about cyber insurance questionnaires and like what to do and right. filling them out. And I think one of the areas of conversation that we'll have tomorrow is talking about what are the things that need to be in place before I answer the questionnaire? What am I willing to defend? Like, what's the hill I'm willing to die on with regards to, you said no to MFA, or you said no to privileged access, or you, like, whatever it might be. Like, I think we're at a point where those are incurred costs, either as a result of not implementing based on recommendation and the costs that come with it, versus the cost of saying, yes, we're going to, whatever Bill says and whatever M6 is doing, we want to do too. And I think you don't have to, no client is asking you for the speeds and fees. They don't want the ones and zero version. They want the, just summarize for me what it is that you're proposing that we should be doing, and what are some options, because money's tight. You know, one option could be like, hey, you don't want to subscribe to fill in the blank, Rocket Cyber, I think is one you mentioned. So if they don't want that, then maybe present it to them in such a way that says, hey, who at your company is, would it make sense for them to monitor your feed, since you don't want to pay to have us do it? Because someone needs to watch this. Someone yeah. needs to keep an eye on it, right? Like, it's kind of like getting your car parked with valet. Wouldn't that be fun, as if you do valet parking and they just put your car in a parking lot that's like across the street with no fences, nothing, and a little sign that says, don't worry, this is under surveillance. The keys are in this box.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter that it's under surveillance, right? Those cars are going to disappear real quick.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, we do. You know, for those, one of the things we do is we do practice what we preach. So we have these tools in place, and we're, you know, we're going through the Trustmark. We explain this to clients when I go out. I met with every one of my clients last year, explain what was going on. And out of the, you know, 60 plus active clients we have on managed services, I had two balk, and we actually have a waiver, Chris. It's strong arm, but we have a waiver, you know, after we explain what the tools are for and what the services we're providing and what we're doing, that says, if you turn down this cybersecurity enhanced offering that we are proposing, you will notify your vendors and clients within 10 days that you have turned down recommended cybersecurity.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it came from our attorney. And of course, it was two law firms that bought. And then they backed down. Yeah. Yeah. So,
you know, it says something too, though. It says, you know, it's like we see this with kids, right? Like, it's really easy to do bullying when you can do it from your cell phone versus doing it in person. Right. And I think that's true with cybersecurity services. It's easy to say no to something that's not tangible. You can't see it. And you don't really understand what the implications are of not having it in place. So being able to articulate, hey, you're saying no, but you're not just saying no to me. You have to say no to everybody that you work with. It's kind of like this is another insurance questioner comment, but like, what does yes, no answer actually mean when I answer this question? And I think that's a really good example of, they said no, but it's no, but, or no, and no, You said no, and you now have to tell everybody that you said no.
Yeah. Well, the other thing we did, Chris, was tell them, and again, this was last year, that if you say no, come January 1st, you are going to need to find a new service provider, because we couldn't, I mean, we were serious about it. We couldn't take the risk of continuing if you're not, you know, willing to take these services and understand the risk they're putting themselves in and their clients. I mean, just like us.
And you and all of your other clients. Right.
Yeah,
so
sure.
I think that's a really good segue, as we have a few minutes left, is to think about, you know, you mentioned the trust mark. It doesn't show up so much just in CIS, but when you think about governance and leadership of any organization, one of the things that you should be doing is doing regular risk assessment, right? Not on your clients necessarily. Of course, that's important too. But in this context, to do a risk assessment on yourself, and you're like, who are my biggest risks? Probably every single one of my clients, right? And when you look at your clients, of those, which have the highest risk, and maybe you give them a letter grade, and you're like, anybody that is a C or below, we have to offboard in the next 90 days to 6 months, because we just can't afford that risk. And I think what it does is, instead of it being this daunting, I can't lose, I mean, that's the whale, right? Like, they pay all the you know, that one that's a D minus, like the, they're covering the four clients that don't pay very much, right? Like, but yeah. I think if you do it in such a way that you set a trajectory that says, over time, we're reducing that risk by X, and you document and track it, nobody's going to, you know, come to you and say, wow, you just kept this client on because they were paying you. Like, you can move away from that. And I think it gives you the ability to plan for replacing that revenue with clients that are willing to sign off on security services. And I think that's where you suddenly get excited about showing up to work the next day.
Right. Right.
Except on the weather we're having, but like normally, like, this is one of those where you're like, I want to get on a plane and fly to another climate where it's comfortable, like tropical climate. But you're like,
yeah, right.
I have to get to the airport. I know it's going to be delayed. I might not even leave the airport. And so then you're right back to you, like, I don't even know why I'm thinking about leaving my house.
Well, that's the way it is here.
Yeah. So with the few minutes that we have left, we've covered a lot of ground. And if I were to summarize, there's three things that anybody who's considering offering security services that isn't already doing it, three things come to mind. Number one is, obviously, don't go and sell security services that you haven't wrapped your head around the value proposition as to why they need this service, because there isn't a one size fits all. I think we talked about that a few times. And within that, it's okay to provide a security service that you're not currently implemented in your own environment if you can defend it, right? So, like, defending it might be, it's on the roadmap for quarter two 2024, but I can't do it right now because these other things have to change in our organization in order for it to work. That doesn't mean your clients have those same restrictions, right? Like, they may not have any of those things. Number two, I think, is you are obligated to educate. You are not obligated to implement. I think you said that twice. I think that's a really important one. And then that leads to the third one. Be prepared to eliminate clients that are putting you at risk because they don't want to take the security services seriously. And I think you gave probably the best one I've heard to date is, if you say no to this, you have to tell everybody else you said no.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because that's not firing a client. That doesn't necessarily mean you're not keeping the client, but we're saying, like, we know that your risk is relatively high. And everybody you do business with should know about this. Like, hey, am I calling the insurance company, or are you calling the insurance company?
Right, right. I mean, and, you know, if you look at it, and all of us in the MSP or IT space know it, if something happens at a client that affects their client, it's going to come right back to us. And we're going to be it's going to be our fault, basically.
And in so many cases, it is your fault, right? Even when it's not your fault based on the technicality, it's your fault because of the negligence that came out of not forcing the cards, right? Like, yep. You knew what would happen. You told them that they needed to do this. They said no. And really, that's where it stopped, because sometimes it's really hard to show the evidence to support why yeah. bad things will still happen.
Yep.
If only there was like a button you could push to say, okay, if you say no, here's exactly what will happen to your company in approximately 30, 60, 90 days, right? Like, yep. if we could do that, I don't think you'd have very many clients saying no to anything.
Right, right.
Well, Bill, is there anything that you want to share with listeners that we might not have covered or that we should cover in another episode as it pertains to security services, how to position them, and what it means to say, I'm not doing this internally, but you need to have it in your environment?
Well, Chris, the only thing I would suggest, and only knowing this because even in our tighter circle of, MSP Ignite and Secure Outcomes, there are members of my peer group and others that, have indicated they don't have the time or it's not on their radar right now. I would suggest to anyone considering it that if you don't start taking this seriously and going through some type of, framework that's going to improve your security, you're going to be out of business or you're going to be left behind. So for those that are a little wary of starting, I would, start somewhere and start as soon as possible.
I think that if the only thing someone got from this episode is that you can't ignore, you have to do something. You can't, I just saying like, I don't have time. I mean, let's be clear. The Trustmark, it seems daunting. CIS, it seems daunting. The reality from any MSP that has really articulated how much time it's taken them to prepare for the assessment, it was about 90 days with an investment of 2 to 5 hours a week. So to me, that says, okay, spread your timeline out a little longer, commit time to this, and you can move forward and get this done. The only ones that are saying this, they don't have time, they're not doing any of it. They're not even trying to put something on the calendar to say, you know what, this week I have an hour, I'm going to at least start.
Yep. Yep. Very important. Very important.
Excellent. Well, this was a great, I learned a lot today, Bill. I really appreciate your time. For those of you listening, this has been an episode of MSP 1337. Thanks and have a great week.
Thanks.